Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on American Family Radio. Today's Issues, the name of this program. Appreciate you listening to AFR. We're going to be here for the next hour and 25 minutes, and we got a lot to talk about, a lot happening in the news. Walker Wildman is with me. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here today on this Thursday edition.
Dr. Ray Pritchard joins us from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Everything's doing well. I'm inside.
There you go.
I'm an inside worker, and I like that.
It's cold everywhere almost.
Huh? What is it there in Kansas City?
Now, it's a balmy 34 degrees this morning, so that's up a little bit. It was 20-something yesterday, but it's cold all over, particularly the midsection of the country, really. Winter has come a little early or something.
Absolutely.
That global warming, Tim, we got to do something about it.
Fred Jackson, good morning, Fred.
Yeah, I got breaking news on the weather.
What is that?
I saw a ray of sunshine just about 5 minutes ago in northern Mississippi.
Right.
A ray of sunshine.
Right, right.
We have not seen it for a while. Right. I almost had to put on my sunglasses because it was such a shock to me.
Walker, tell folks how they can watch this here show.
Yes.
On that there internet.
There you go. You can watch it.
I'm quoting Ed Battagliano.
In two places. You can watch it on Facebook or on YouTube. If you want to see Ed when he's in here on Mondays and Wednesdays, you can do that, and on Fridays. Mm-hmm. Today's Issues on Facebook and YouTube. Watch the show there. We'll be posting the news articles on our Facebook page. Just type in Today's Issues.
Okay. Ray, what about this? We got a lot to talk about, but this is not fitting into the global warming narrative.
No, and they're saying we may have colder than normal. I mean, Fred, does this mean we're going to get some Nova Scotia weather here in the midsection of the?
Already, Washington. Have you seen the pictures from Washington D.C. this morning?
No,
snowstorm.
Snow, yeah,
snowstorm in Washington.
Not even Thanksgiving.
Not even.
No.
It's not winter yet, folks. Mm. Yeah. And we got a snowstorm in Washington D.C.
Now they're used to that in Minnesota and the Dakotas. And
yeah, Chicago,
places like that. You know, winter does arrive.
And Buffalo, there's snow in June.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. But you know, also you got to keep in mind, global weather. You don't take a snapshot of anywhere and say that's representative of what's happening on the entire planet. But at the same time. Somewhere Al Gore today is got his hands in his face going, I just can't catch a break. Every time I want to whip up, the global warming climate change frenzy, here comes
here comes a cold front.
Here comes a brutal cold front, thanks to Canada.
Yes,
and,
that's right.
Sweeping a lot of the country. All right, Fred, let's get started. What do you want to start with?
Well, I was going to say, let's get back to reality.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure the Florida situation is reality either, a good example. In about 4 hours, supposedly, there is a deadline for the recount going on in the various counties down there. That is the imposed deadline. Now, having said that, there is a judge's decision yesterday, U.S. District Judge Mark Walker, who, by the way, was nominated by President Barack Obama in 2012, he has given thousands of Florida voters until this weekend to fix their ballots if they haven't been counted due to mismatched signatures. In other words, voters have signatures on record. The signatures that they saw on these ballots did not match. So Judge Walker has decided, okay, I'll give you an opportunity to get the signature right. So he's giving all of these people, we're talking about thousands of ballots, so they can get to rewrite their signature.
How do you know you're one of those people?
Yeah, how would you know that?
I suppose you're going to be contacted by the county officials saying, hey, we threw out your ballot because the signatures didn't match. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if you want to come in, rewrite your signature. and prove who you are.
That's a week and a half after the election.
Yeah.
So you could come in this weekend.
Yeah.
And you could say, okay, so what are they really saying? That somebody else signed, or what is this even implying? Who signed the ballot, right, in the original?
What the concern?
Voter fraud.
Yeah.
This is turning into a circus, if you will.
Of course.
And it's really disgraceful, because what's the point of having these state laws that set the rules on elections and when ballots are due and when districts have to submit their returns? You know, if everybody wants to be like Florida, then you just hang on to the ballots for a week or however long you need to get things right.
It's crazy.
Now, where I vote, I'm trying to think through this process. I have to go up and show my ID, my photo ID, state law in Mississippi, and I sign the register that I have voted. Okay. Then I'm handed a ballot. Then I go over and vote. And then I put my vote in the machine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not literally signing the ballot, right? You're signing another.
Yeah. No, you don't sign the ballot. So I don't understand.
Right. It may have to do with early voting.
It's mail-in ballots.
Maybe these mail-in ballots, you do have to sign your name.
Yes.
Okay.
To certify it, if you will.
So a mail-in ballot that the signature quote doesn't match up. Is there any more light you can shed on this, Fred?
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't even try.
Other than the judge is pushing it back again.
Yes.
Because it's already...
Now, but what's the claim that the signature doesn't match up with what?
With the official signature, supposedly, of the registered voter.
How many of these ballots are there?
There's a figure of nearly 4,000 ballots
that don't.
State officials said they were rejected because the signatures didn't match.
Okay, here's my thing: is if you don't follow the instructions, then your vote is invalid, right?
Right.
That's the way I see it.
That's the way it should be.
Just like, you know, your teacher says, be sure to sign your name or you're going to get an F.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't sign your name, you may have done well on the test, but, you know, some teachers give you
or
an F.
To go with your example, multiple choice test.
Yeah.
Gee, I meant to put the X by the C.
Right.
But I put it by the D. So can I go back and do it? Because I found out it was wrong. So can I go back?
This appears to me that the judge is wanting Nelson to win. Again, I'm just because Scott is ahead. So yes. We need as many Nelson votes as we can get. Because this is a federal judge?
Federal judge.
Yeah. A federal judge is intervening in the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Obama judge?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's the margin of difference between Scott and Nelson at this point?
I'm not sure at this point because we're waiting for the figure this afternoon after the recount.
Broward County, they had a picnic yesterday, so they couldn't count. Today, they're going bowling. I think people are counting down there, so they're going to get to it.
Deep sea fishing the day after tomorrow.
Yes, they're going to get to it, Ray, when they can. Why the hurry? When the rest of the state's been done for 10 days.
Right.
Well, this Judge Walker said yesterday, Florida's the laughing stock of the world. Now, this is what he said yesterday.
Who, the judge did?
The judge did. I mean, part of the other, in Broward County, the machines are heating up, like getting real hot.
Overheating.
Yeah. And so that's messing things up.
I'm sure this judge would say to me that he's offended by me saying that he thinks Nelson should win, but I'm just saying that When you follow the law and you fill your ballot out correctly,
right?
If you don't, then your vote is invalid because you didn't fill out. You don't get a second chance to go back and get it right. That's my point. Regardless, they're not
following state law.
Yeah, and I don't think it's the right of the judge to negate the state law,
right,
federal judge, with respect to what I just described. Go ahead, Walker.
Yeah, to answer the question about the numbers, it looks like Governor Rick Scott, the Republican Senate candidate, is up 13,000 votes. That was at the time this judge issued this ruling. Looks like 3 p.m. deadline today to get these ballots done. But
right,
13,000 vote difference, which in a state of 8 million,
even if all 4,000 went for Bill Nelson, that's still not enough.
Correct.
To close
that
the
is correct. Mm-hmm. But we have to wait for the recount
of the whole state
to come out this afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens there. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you are a Republican or a conservative and you need Rick Scott to hold on to that seat and upset Nelson, the incumbent, because the Supreme Court may be an issue in the next 2 years, and the Republicans need to have as large a margin as they can have in the U.S. Senate to assure that President Trump's nominee would get through.
Yes.
So if you have a 53-47 margin, you can pretty much guarantee that anybody he puts up will get through. But you get less than that, it becomes iffy for the reasons Ed talked about. That is Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, and Murkowski, is that her name?
Murkowski.
From Alaska. Those three in particular could vote against a Trump-appointed appointment to the Supreme Court. Now, that would be 50-50 even there. Mike Pence could. So you would feel more comfortable if you are, somebody who wants to see the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for instance, if she drops off, you want to see her replaced with a conservative,
mm-hmm.
you would need to hope that the Republicans get a 53-47 margin. Next story, Fred.
Well,
or related to. Are you gonna? Is it a whole new story?
I was just going to say we're still watching what's happening in Georgia also in the governor's race there because Abrams, the Democrat, good friend of Oprah Winfrey, is still fighting there, although the margin between Abrams and Kemp, the Secretary of State Kemp, who won on election night, is huge. Even if she was to get 15,000 more votes, it's not even enough to call for a recount in that one. But she's before the courts also.
You know, I think this seems to be a trend here. When Republicans lose, Republicans accept the results and move on how to win in the next election.
Mm-hmm.
But when Democrats lose, remember, even Hillary Clinton didn't concede the night of the election, despite the fact that it was, in circumstances, a landslide, if you will, considering that Hillary was projected to win in every most of the major polls. Mm-hmm. But Democrats are always the ones saying, President Trump, are you going to accept the results of the election? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do if the Republicans lose the House, lose the Senate? And now they're the ones not accepting the results.
Yep. Well, that is part of their campaign all the time. They fight any redistricting that occurs. When a state government does redistricting, they fight that. Then they start claiming that the Secretary of State is not counting all the ballots, is making it difficult for people to register to vote, all that sort of thing. And then if they lose, as you say, Walker, they know they can go to the courts and look for a friendly judge, i.e. appointed by a Democrat senator
mm-hmm.
or nominated by a Democrat senator, who will be sympathetic to their claim. And that's what's happening in Florida right now, folks. Mm-hmm. It really is. Another court case going on. We'll get a result on this one this afternoon. This one involves CNN reporter Jim Acosta. I want to replay the confrontation that started all of this. This was the day after the election.
Is this all of it or partial?
This is partial. This is 30 seconds of it. Jim Acosta, a well-known CNN face, has a confrontation with President Trump. This is the day after the election last week. And he refused to give up a microphone. And it's one thing for a reporter to ask a question, but Jim Acosta has become accustomed to lecturing the president when he gets up. Here's 30 seconds of this confrontation.
They're hundreds of miles away, though. They're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. That's not an invasion.
Honestly, I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN.
All right.
And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question. Mr. President, if I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough. That's enough.
Mr. President, I was going to ask one of the other folks.
That's enough.
Pardon me, ma'am. Mr. President.
That's enough. I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN.
We didn't have time to play this, but the reason I ask you about that was Jim Acosta and the president. The reason I ask you how much of it we were going to play, because you can appreciate the president's reaction if you watch the whole thing.
That's right.
And I watched the whole thing. And the president started out being very respectful to Jim Acosta and answered his questions. In fact, the president said, about an invasion. Well, we just disagree, I think, was what he said, talking to Jim about a definition. I did think to myself, the Jim Acosta CNN is splitting hairs on the definition of invasion when everybody knows what President Trump's talking about, when thousands of people come into your country illegally, and that's what their intention is with these caravans. That's an invasion. Okay, no, they don't have guns necessarily, but it's still an invasion. Everybody knows that, and Acosta's trying to lecture the president. No, it's not. They're still down in Mexico. What you're saying is not true, and everybody knows they're still in Mexico, Jim. What the president is talking about is when they come, they intend to invade.
Right.
So I don't blame the president here for sitting him down, Acosta. And again, you would have to watch the whole thing to appreciate what I'm talking about.
Yeah, there was another aspect to this. Jim Acosta refused to give up the microphone.
He did.
They had a young lady who works for the White House who was taking the microphone around to the various reporters. And he basically shoved her hand away when she went to get that microphone.
Yeah.
So those two things together resulted in the White House saying that Jim Acosta doesn't have free access to the White House anymore. He didn't ban the White House didn't ban all CNN reporters.
Okay.
Just Jim Acosta.
Okay.
Please keep that in mind.
They took away his press credentials.
Yes. So CNN goes to court. And by the way, Fox News is supporting Jim Acosta. So is the Associated Press.
I'm sure it's a union thing. They all are.
Ten others. Okay.
Yeah.
So there was a court case yesterday. The judge in this case is Judge Timothy Kelly, who, by the way, was nominated by President Trump last year. So we are awaiting a decision. He's going to render his decision this afternoon. But I think this is a critical case. Does the White House have a right to tell a reporter who behaves like Jim Acosta, you're not welcome on the grounds anymore?
Sure they do. It may not be a good move. It may or may not be a good move in the eyes of the public, but this is not a constitutional issue.
No.
Now, if the government was trying to deny Jim Acosta the right to speak, then it would be. I just said, in fact, the White House doesn't even have to hold press conferences every day.
That's right.
Ray, they don't even have to do that. So this is a nutty lawsuit. And I think they'll lose because nobody's rights are being violated here.
I think the White House is going to win this on the very grounds you just said. But going all the way back, watch President Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, all of them, they get to choose who they want to recognize.
Right.
You know, if you're the president and you don't want to talk to Jim Acosta that day, you don't have to, and you haven't violated any of his rights. By that same principle, you don't even have to allow him to come into the press conference, which, as you said, you're not even mandated by the Constitution even to have. White House is going to win this, I believe.
Yeah, the CNN lawsuit calls for the revocation, quote, and calls the revocation an unabashed attempt to censor the press and exclude reporters from the White House who challenge and dispute the president's point of view, end quote. Give me a break.
No, that's not true.
I watch that briefing every day.
They're all against the president.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Right.
When a reporter gets up, they're challenging what the White House is saying every day.
Right, right.
All the reporters do that. So to make the claim that, he doesn't like this reporter because he challenges the White House, all the reporters do it. That is not the reason. Jim Acosta's got a big, huge ego.
Right.
and he is arrogant. And it's really interesting. Bob Woodward, famous reporter from Watergate days, Bob Woodward, who's not a conservative, came out and said the other day that CNN is playing in the playing into the president's hands. Mm-hmm. And others have said this too, that this president, he continues just to draw these reporters in, goad them to it in a certain extent. They make a big blow up about it. And I tell you what, he has a field day with this. Mm-hmm. The American people are behind the president when it comes to the relationship with the liberal media in this country.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be CNN loses that one there because nobody's denying CNN access to the White House. And even if the president wanted to do that, he could.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, it's really baffling that these major media outlets who probably have very smart lawyers are counseled that you can win this one. And maybe they've counseled them that you can't win this one, but let's just do it for show.
Yeah,
let's just do it to prove a point. Because there's, as Ray and Tim have mentioned, there's no constitutional right to a press conference in the White House. It's the president's. He's the executive,
right?
And he can say you're not welcome here to anybody. They don't even have to have press conferences.
Right.
Matter of fact, they could just say no press allowed on the White House property altogether, and that would be constitutional.
Nobody's free speech rights are being violated here.
Yeah.
So Jim Acosta can stand outside the White House and report all day. Mm-hmm. He traveled to Paris to report on the president. Did you see that?
Oh, yes.
So this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So he's
got
not
himself
a
nice French vacation last weekend, you know.
He's not a martyr for the First Amendment.
No.
Give me a break.
No.
Next story.
All right, General Mattis, Secretary of Defense, was on the border yesterday down in Donna, Texas, where many of our military personnel have gathered down there. And he was down there to give them a bit of a boost because the mainstream media, once again, has been very critical. These editorial writers saying it's a waste of money to have them down there, and it's just ridiculous, it's a show, et cetera, et cetera. I was listening to an interview done Sebastian Gorka, former advisor to the president. He was on Fox and Friends this morning. We need to remind people this is not the first time the president of the United States, a president of the United States, has sent the military to our southern border. Here's Sebastian Gorka, cut one.
Four-star Marine Corps legends like Secretary Mattis don't do political stunts. And in fact, Secretary Mattis has said so in public. This is something we've done dozens and dozens of times before under previous administrations, including the Obama administration. This is military support to civilian authorities. And when you've got 7,000, 10,000, 12,000 illegal immigrants coming to the border, then our CBP agents, our Customs and Border Patrol, need support.
Right.
And this is a very, very righteous mission.
So there you have it. Yeah, even President Barack Obama did the same thing. So again, folks, we encourage you to don't take everything the mainstream media reports as gospel. They are very anti-Trump. Anything he does or doesn't do, they're going to turn against. Bottom line.
This the military was sent down there. How many troops?
There are about, I think, a total of between four and 5,000 is the count that I had heard. And that's divided between this area of Donna, Texas, just north of the border there, and also over in San Diego.
Yeah, well, this is in response to these thousands of people coming up from Central America.
Who have started to arrive. They're at the border right
and
now.
They've stated their intentions to come into the U.S. illegally.
Correct.
And so the president is sending the troops there to support the border control.
That is correct.
The troops aren't going to be involved in armed conflict with anybody. They're only there to be... And they're putting up barbed wire and things of that nature. And also, I think it's making a statement to to those people that we've got enough manpower here to handle the problem.
That's right.
But General Mattis is there himself, Secretary.
He was there
of
yesterday.
All right, we'll be back in a minute with more today's issues on American Family Radio. Stay with us.
King of the Wild Frontier.
The music's free. I know We call it Learning University.
Of necessity.
Trivia Friday.
True.
Ding, ding, ding,
yes.
ding, ding.
Yes.
Oh, really?
That's correct. Giraffes do not have vocal cords.
So you want a cheeseburger without cheese?
Hold the cheese.
I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
Take a break with Tim Wildman and the gang. Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our tours each year fill up quickly. And so I'm letting you know now, don't tell anybody else now, that the 2019 Spiritual Heritage Tours are planned for June and for September. So if you want to go this year, that is 2019, you need to let us know as soon as you can. Visit the website SpiritualHeritageTours.com. SpiritualHeritageTours.com. Again, those are two separate trips, one to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, and the other one to Washington, D.C., and George Washington's Mount Vernon. Stephen McDowell, who's the president and founder of the Providence Foundation, is our historian, and he'll be on both trips telling us the behind the scenes and the stories of who, what, when, and why.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
London Lamar is one of the youngest members of the Tennessee State House, 27 years old, elected in the midterm elections to represent a section of Memphis. Miss Lamar is also African American, and she is not all that fond of white people. The Tennessee Star posted video of Miss Lamar making offensive, if not bigoted, comments about people who live in the Volunteer State.
Looking here at Tennessee, let's just call a spade a spade. Tennessee's racist. Period.
She also called Tennesseans uneducated.
Most of the Tennesseans who voted Republican are uneducated. So they don't even know that they showed up to the polls to vote against their own interests. They literally voted on color lines.
Miss Lamar later apologized for making what she called an overgeneralization of white people. It wasn't so much that as it was a downright racist overgeneralization of white people. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Appreciate you listening to AFR. If you want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. I'm Tim with Walker and Fred and Ray, and we're talking about the news of the day. Hey, that was a rhyme. I could probably turn that into a rap if you want to.
There you go.
Think I ought to try that, Fred?
Got the first line already.
Our funny talking friend, Ray Comfort, will be here in 10 minutes, 12 minutes. If you want to know what I'm talking about, just wait. I probably won't, Ray, I don't know. I've teased him every time almost about his, how he talks. But maybe I won't.
You do every time.
Yeah.
He's got a great sense of humor.
Yeah. I tell you what, I'm probably not going to tease him this time, but I'm just telling everybody, listen, just make sure you listen. You'll see what I'm talking about.
New Zealand, right? He's from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's different than an Australian accent.
Yes, it is.
It's its own.
Mm-hmm. But he's been living in Southern California
for
years.
A long time. Yeah. Yeah, he has. What's your next story, Fred?
All right. As part of the post-election process, the parties are picking their leaders. And yesterday, the Republicans decided in a closed-door meeting that Kevin McCarthy will be their minority leader in the House.
When you say closed door meeting, what do you mean by that?
They caucused behind closed doors. In other words, the vote wasn't public. The media wasn't invited inside.
It's a vote among their members.
Correct. And the vote, we are told, someone came out and told a reporter that the vote was 159 for Kevin McCarthy versus 43 votes for Jim Jordan. And many conservatives had been hoping for Jim Jordan in this case. And I think, you know, part of the analysis in all of this is that there were many Republican voters who were not happy with what they saw as a lack of support coming from the House for the president's agenda. And they felt that new leadership was needed. They weren't happy with Paul Ryan at all. Of course, Paul Ryan didn't run again. But the feeling was that Kevin McCarthy would continue the type of leadership that Paul Ryan gave the House versus Jim Jordan, who would fight for the president's agenda. But that's the result of the vote yesterday.
Yeah, not surprising. I guess I was surprised that Jim Jordan didn't get any closer than he did. What was the final score?
159-43 is the report.
But what you have to keep in mind here is that in any organization, political, business, the local Rotary Club, church, almost whatever it is, in any organization, they have a leadership ranking, right? Mm-hmm. And usually right. you're selected by your peers to be in whatever, your treasurer, secretary, vice president, president, whatever. All right. So the natural way it works, we all know this, is you move up if you want to, and you do a good job and your peers approve of you, you work up. So when the president of the local Rotary Club retires or resigns, then the VP moves up to that position. And so that's the way it is with these political parties. So if Jim Jordan was to have won that, that would be an upset. I was for Jim Jordan. We were mm-hmm. for Jim Jordan. But that would have been an upset. So I'm not surprised that that Kevin McCarthy moved on up, because he was number two to Paul Ryan. Right. Paul Ryan was number two to Jim to Boehner back when he left. I will say this one other thing about that. I think you're always going to be disappointed if you are a true liberal or you are a true conservative. You're almost always, Ray, going to be disappointed with whoever your leader is, because they're not when you take over a leadership position, your role changes somewhat. It's hard to be a diehard and then also try to work with people who you disagree with to pass legislation, for example. You want to comment on that?
Well, Nancy Pelosi's got the same problem on the other side, which, Fred, I'm sure we're going to get to. But, I mean, your point's well taken. The art of politics is part of it, at least, is the art of compromise. So it's one thing to be staking out your strong position when you're sitting there by yourself, right?
Right.
But when you're up there elected to leadership, by definition, you've got to bring the whole caucus together. So, yes, true conservatives are often going to be disappointed with what happens in Washington,
Walker.
And we are.
Yeah, there's two angles here. The first is, I think, speaking as a conservative, to kind of justify their move to try to get Jim Jordan in that position. As a conservative, conservatives have been frustrated. This is not a new thing, probably the last 10, 20 years, that Republicans campaign on very good things, very conservative ideals and goals, then they get to Washington and they don't fight tooth and nail, if you will, for those goals. Mm-hmm.
They would say they do, but that they don't control. But they still have to contend with the Democrats.
Yeah.
So what are you?
And to just give a practical example, the main issue here that conservatives have had a problem with is budgeting. From the House side, budgeting, every 3 to 6 months, the government reaches a budget deal, the president signs it, and it funds all the federal government and other things. Well, we conservatives have been frustrated that the Republicans keep compromising, if you will, on virtually every important issue, that they have. It's one thing if Republicans get three issues that they win and Democrats get their three issues, but Republicans virtually sell out every time we go around to sign the budget, and we fund Planned Parenthood. They keep killing babies. There's billions in wasteful spending that even the Democrats look at and go, yeah, that's wasteful, but we're still going to spend it. And so Republicans, and the last thing I'll say here is, the more that things go on in Washington, the more as time goes on, there's not as many conservatives up there as we'd like. That's just reality. There's 43 people voted for Jim Jordan as to be the minority leader.
That's representative of the Freedom Caucus. Yes. What they're going to tell you, Fred, we don't want to belabor this too much because it gets boring, quite frankly, but what you're saying is true, Walker, but you would have to have somebody on here who could articulate the position that they feel like they're in. A lot of these congressmen, they would say, I am with you, Walker, and I'm very conservative, but we don't have the votes to end the funding for Planned Parenthood. What do you want me to do, shut down the government over this?
Right.
The vast majority of Americans are not in favor of shutting down the government almost over anything. So if you're asking me to shut down the government over your particular issue and we lose support among the American people, then we lose House seats, and then we lose a lot more than what you're talking about. So you see where they go with this? And proving that or disproving that is often like...
It's a matter of opinion.
Nail and jello to the right. Wall. So it's very difficult to do. So I just think we have to continue to support conservative candidates. And we do have to hold their feet to the fire and make them accountable and make them answer the hard questions sometimes when they do things that seem like they're compromising.
Mm-hmm.
And as Ray said, sometimes you have to compromise. You just do. When you're not in charge of, again, back to my analogy, if you've ever been a part of a group, now Christians can't compromise on our convictions or our theological teaching.
That's right.
We can't compromise on that. But you get into general public politics, sometimes you have to get the most you can, the best you can. Fred,
I think the greater spotlight seems to be on the Democrats right now.
Yeah.
In the Democrat camp, it's the left versus the far left. It is Nancy Pelosi versus the young radicals coming up in the Democratic Party.
Or old radicals, if you look at Bernie Sanders.
Or Bernie Sanders, that's right. He just doesn't fit.
I know.
At all. But anyway, Nancy Pelosi will face a battle of sorts. There are some openly opposed to her continuing on and becoming the House Speaker again. Their battles, for the most part, are being held behind closed doors, but there were protests outside of Nancy Pelosi's office this week for some people who don't want her to be House Speaker. So we'll see what happens there. I think in the end, the far-left radicals are going to win in that camp. And I think Nancy Pelosi will hold the House Speaker for a while, but I don't think she can last because I think the number of radicals are building in the Democratic Party, and they will take over at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to happen. Bernie Sanders did so well in 2016. The party is aware that in the country – if they want to continue to get young female support, the university people, all of that sort of thing, they believe they're going to have to move the party even further left than where they are now. There's going to be a great distinction. You know, there may be battles inside the Republican Party, but the next election is going to see a very vivid, almost black and white difference between the two parties when it comes to public policy.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that, as Ray mentioned earlier, that Democrats have their own problems, if you will, as far as intra-party fighting, because, and you may have already mentioned this, but there was a video out of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, the new congresswoman.
Mm-hmm.
Her first day on Capitol Hill for the new members meeting, she went to Nancy Pelosi's office and joined protesters.
Yes.
Far-left protesters in Nancy Pelosi's office. Mm-hmm. She joined them in protesting against Nancy Pelosi. And so that's interesting to see that who's going to win on that side.
Ocasio-Cortez said, they're mistaking me for an intern. So, we'll, Ray, go ahead. You were going to say?
Look, she's quite charismatic. Her politics are, what would you say, Fred? Far left? Is that for her?
Oh, yeah. She's right out there off the ledge.
What is it? You get elected to office. Is this a good move? And your first thing is to go into Nancy Pelosi's office and take part in a sit-in?
Well, let me clarify that from what I understand, Walker. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think she went there, Cortez, as a freshman to meet with the leader of her party. And then when she came out, am I wrong about this? Then when she came out, these environmental protesters who looked like they were 22-year-olds who were between college and a job, that they were there protesting with their yellow shirts on and their signs because Nancy Pelosi is not far enough left for them.
Mm-hmm.
She just happened to be there, but she embraced them, high-fived them, and said, keep it up, basically. But she was saying, I stand with the speaker, and she's going to do a great job on this. We need to keep pushing for good environmental laws or something like that. So, I don't know if she went there with the intent of protesting the speaker. I think she maybe got caught up in something, but she didn't leave. She didn't say she disagreed with them, what they were doing. You're listening to...
Yeah, so go ahead. I want to ask a question. Yeah. Are the Democrats going to put up somebody to oppose Nancy Pelosi?
I don't think you're going to see it publicly like you did on the Republican side. They try to, and here's the other thing when it comes to the Democrats. The mainstream media will not report on the extent of the division inside the Democratic Party like they would with the Republican Party. So, yes, it's happening, but you're not going to see the spotlight put on it by the mainstream media that you do when the mainstream media covers the Republican Party.
Yeah.
But it's there. And I still do believe in the next 2 to 3 years you're going to see the Democratic Party. Look at the history, 25 years since Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton actually did some conservative things when he was in office. Mm-hmm. When it comes to religious freedom, go back to those days. And but, you know, the Democratic Party, what was it in 2000? Was it 2012 or earlier than that? When they had the resolution at the Democratic Party convention on whether to mention God in the platform. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was absolutely shocking. Mm-hmm. So the Democratic Party has been on a march to the far left, and it's just going to continue.
Yeah. One more note about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
She's the, I don't know, she's probably in her 30s.
No, 20s. She's in her 20s from New York.
Okay, she's in her 20s, but she is you've seen her on television. She shocked the world by beating an incumbent Democrat there of many years in the state of New York to win the Democrat primary, then won the general to be elected to Congress. I will say this. She tweeted something funny yesterday. She strikes me as a nice, naive liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't think she doesn't strike me as one of these, you know, frothing at the mouth, hateful types, to use from the left. But, she said, quote, people keep giving me, she's on Capitol Hill, and she's getting orientated, she's trying to get her office, she's trying to get started as a U.S. congressman, or congresswoman. She said, quote, tweeted, people keep giving me directions to the spouse and intern events instead of the ones for members of Congress. You need to go over there. That's where the wives are. You're an intern. Okay, you need to go over here. No, I'm a member of Congress. I need to go there. So anyway. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. That's the name of this program. Tim Walker, Fred, and Ray, we thank you for listening. You want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. You can watch our show. We're live video streaming on Facebook and YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and you can watch the show there. Our guest now is Ray Comfort. Ray is with us I don't know, once a month or so, to talk about reaching people for Christ. That's the bottom line goal of the ministry of Living Waters. And Ray's got a new product, a new project out to help people do that. Ray, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Tim.
Where are, see what I mean, people? Listen to me. Anyway, hey Ray, talk about the in all seriousness, the fires there are, what, 25, 30 miles from you north to Malibu?
Yeah, Kirk Cameron was tweeting me and telling me that he went down a street and there was fires right throughout the neighborhood. And their house got smoke damage, but it was safe from the flames. So he's not even living in his home. He can't get back there. He's living in a hotel with his wife and three dogs and all his kids. And
Kirk Cameron we're talking about.
Yeah, so thank God that he's okay. But what a terrible tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to pray for California.
Yeah.
We get beautiful weather, but there's just I can't even remember when there was rain.
Really?
When it does come, when it rains, we go outside and look at it. It's just a very strange place, and but we need some rain.
Yeah.
And that's in the hands of God. He's in charge of the weather department, and I think we've lost his blessing as a nation.
Hey, Ray, talk about you got a new video out called The Final Curtain, Fame, Fortune, and Feudal Lives. Talk about that, if you would.
It's actually not a video.
Well, okay. Just go ahead and embarrass me.
Intro.
Go ahead and embarrass the host right here in front of everybody, Ray. You could have said it a little bit different than that, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's a book called The Final Curtain. It's two books in one. You turn the book upside down, and there's another book called From the Ledge on the other side. Final Curtain is looking at celebrity suicides, and the reason it's celebrity suicides is because nobody wants to read a book on suicide. I didn't want to write a book on suicide. I don't even like talking about it. And no one's going to buy a book on suicide because if you've lost a loved one through suicide, you don't want to read a book about it. It's too raw. And if you haven't, it's kind of irrelevant. But 45,000 people each year are taking their lives. That's about 800 a week. It's just crazy. We've got an epidemic. The world doesn't know what causes depression that leads to suicide. It doesn't even know what causes depression, let alone have a cure. We do as Christians. We know what the problem is. And so we've got to step up to the plate and say, here's an answer. So we've wrapped this, and we've wrapped jalapeno in candy, so to speak. Everyone's interested in celebrities, except you guys, I suppose, too spiritual. But most people want to know what a celebrity eats, what he drinks, what he drives, what he thinks about, and what causes his depression. Because you think to yourself, how could a celebrity be depressed when they've got fame and fortune? Everything they want is at their fingertips, and yet they take their lives. And so this book gives the answer. You're probably going to ask me what causes depression.
Yeah, on the video.
Yeah.
What do you?
You know, the world experts don't know what causes depression, as I said. Unfortunately, I'm not an expert, and I do know what causes depression. Book of Hebrews, chapter 2, verse 15 says, all of humanity is held captive by the fear of death. This is what it says, who all their lifetime were subject to the bondage of the fear of death. The modern version says, who through fear of death have been living all their lives as slaves to constant dread. And that's what secretly haunts every unsaved person. There's a dread of this coming appointment with death that they've got no control over. And that's what I believe causes people to be depressed. And the problem is the experts say, the answer to this dilemma is to diagnose depression as a mental illness. Well, that's crazy because the World Health Organization says that 350 million people have depression. So 350 million people in the world have mental disease. No, they don't. Life is depressing. And if you're depressed about life, you're a thinking person. You don't have mental problems. You don't need drugs given to you by a psychologist that have side effects that are worse than the original problem. You're just a thinking person. You realize that every day we all have problems, from a sty in the eye to a sore throat to car problems to dental problems. Life has got problems all every day. Plus, there's a fear of cancer because we've got a plague of cancer on the nation, plus the fact that everybody dies. And if you think about it and you're not a Christian, that is depressing. And that's what drives many to take their lives. The fear of death is overtakes the fear of living, so they take their lives because they're so depressed, and the world just says, you're mental, you're crazy, and give them drugs, that psychotic drugs that drive them even worse. So as Christians, we've got to step up to the plate with this one, because I think one of the scariest signs that somebody is about to commit suicide is there are no signs. And someone around us could be thinking of taking their lives. So we've got to reach out with the gospel and say there is hope, because the Christian has a living hope. And hope is a weak word as far as the world's concerned, but it's a very strong word for the Christian. We have an anchor for the soul, a hope, a living hope. We're like a man that's on the edge of a plane 10,000 feet up. We have to jump, but we have a parachute. And our fear will be in direct proportion to how much faith we have in the parachute. If we 100% trust the parachute, we'll say, oh, here goes, whoopee, I'm jumping, I'm having a good time, I'm saved because of the parachute. And when you're trusting in Jesus, your fear of death is dissipated by the amount of trust that you have in him. If we trust him 100%, death is just an open door that we pass through into eternity, and we've got this living hope. And that's what we've got to take to the ungodly and say, there is a God that made a provision for you to have death nullifying in your life. And I think one of the craziest things the Bible says that makes no sense until you understand it is that Jesus Christ has abolished death and brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. That's the glorious hope we have in Christ, and that's what this book brings out, and I hope people pick it
up. All right, how to get it?
You know, through Amazon or through Living Waters. It's two books in one, as I said. One book's upside down. It's called From the Ledge, and it's where I talk to a guy on the San Francisco Bridge. One of my great fears is that I'll come up to someone who's going to jump off a ledge on a four-story building, and whatever I say could determine where he stays or goes. And so I have this scenario where I give a guy a paradigm shift. Tim, do you know what a paradigm shift is?
Yes, I do, and they taste great.
Well, let me give you one. There's a blind man gets on a bus, totally blind, and a gentleman on the bus stands up and gives him his seat. Was that a good thing to do?
Yes.
No, it wasn't. It was a very bad thing. The man lost his job because he did that, because he was the bus driver. And you don't give your seat to a blind man when you're the bus driver. That's called a paradigm shift. You can have audience laughter there.
Yeah.
It's called a paradigm shift where you believe something is good and information causes you to change your mind and realize it's bad. And we have information for the world that changes their mind. And that's what happens with this young guy. He's going to jump, and he says, there's no way you're going to talk me out of jumping. I'm going to do it. You just have to get the courage. And so I give him a paradigm shift that changes his mind. It's very moving, and it puts tools into the hands of Christians so they know how to speak to the ungodly that are considering suicide or have depression.
Yeah. Hey, look, thanks so much, Ray. We wish you the best, brother. And if people want to get these two books, what are they called and where to get them?
The Final Curtain is what it's called, and you can get it from Amazon or living.waters.com or any intelligent bookstore.
Okay. Thanks, Ray. Take care, my friend.
Thank you for letting me talk about this. God bless you guys.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. That's our good friend Ray Comfort out there in Southern California with Living Waters Ministries. Ray, what did you think about what he was sharing there?
You know, it's a terrific point. If I say to you, let's talk about suicide, you know, I'm going to be eating by myself because, you know, nobody wants to do that. So this is a great idea. And he talks about Anthony Bourdain and Amy Winehouse, and I'm looking at the table of contents. Fantastic. And our insatiable desire to know more about our celebrities, and then he ties it into the problem of suicide and brings us back to the gospel. Terrific book. Plus, he's a great interview. Paradigm shift. Who knew that tasted so good?
Yeah. All right. Brett, thank you for your contributions.
As always, great to be here.
This hour. Walker and I shall return along with Ray and Steve Jordahl. We'll tag team with Fred here from the AFR News Desk, and we'll continue talking about what's happening in our country and in our world. Much more to discuss when we get back from this short break for news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.